Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers,
and from the law firm of Primer, Piper, Eggleston, and Kramer, providing comprehensive legal counsel to New Hampshire businesses and their owners for more than 30 years. For more information or to speak to an attorney, visit primer.com. And from the New Hampshire Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food. New Hampshire's farms and farmers markets are full of fresh goods, rich with agricultural heritage, and available all year long. You can locate pick-your-own-farms, farmers markets, fairs, and more near you using the directories at visitnh.gov/agriculture.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. For decades, a central complaint about the American healthcare system was this, that most insurance plans covered physical illness more readily and generously than mental illness. And so in 2008, Congress responded with the Mental Health Parity and Addiction Equity Act. It said that insurers who covered both physical and mental ailments had to do so equally. But now, 10 years later, many in the mental health field say the promise of parity remains unmet. And today in The Exchange, we find out why. And let's hear from you. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-6477. We have four guests in studio. With us is Lucy Hotter, Professor of Law and Director of Health Law and Policy at UNH School of Law and the Institute for Health Policy and Practice. Lucy, nice to see you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Laura.
Also with us, Andrea Rancatori with Ambetter Insurance. She's Director of Substance Use Disorder Programming for New Hampshire Healthy Families, which covers Medicaid patients. Andrea, nice to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us, Jennifer Patterson, Life and Health Director at the New Hampshire Insurance Department. Jenny, good to see you. Welcome back.
Thanks, Laura.
And also with us, Dr. Robert Fader, psychiatrist in private practice in Manchester, also a member of the National Assembly and Council on Addictions for the American Psychiatric Association. And Dr. Fader, good to meet you. Thank you for being here as well.
Glad to be here.
Well, Dr. Fader, I want to start with you first. Why did health insurance plans used to treat mental and physical illnesses differently? What was the thinking there?
I think they were trying to save money, and they were targeting a vulnerable audience. There's a couple of reasons for this. One is there has been stigma about mental illness and substance abuse problems in this country for a long, long time. These were often viewed as character problems or weaknesses of will rather than the illnesses that they are. And the other main reason is that insurance companies and actually our own government saw this as an easy target for saving money because this population is impaired. People that are depressed have a hard time getting the wherewithal together to fight for what they need. And the stigma about mental illness makes it hard for people to speak up and reveal that they have these problems.
So if we see, as a society, mental illness, substance abuse as a moral failing, then we have no reason to cover it.
Right.
How do you think we're doing on parity now, Dr. Fader, 10 years out?
We're doing better than we were 20 years ago before there was a parity law, but there are still a lot of problems. There are still many cases where insurance companies and the federal government are not yet treating mental illness on a par with other physical illnesses.
How do you see this day-to-day in your own practice?
In a number of ways. First of all, people that need inpatient treatment for mental illness or substance abuse problems often are not able to get it because any admission to a mental health facility requires a prior authorization by an insurance company, and insurance companies are trying to deny these admissions because it saves them money. And the criteria that they use to do this are often not transparent. They're not readily available. And they are actually discriminatory. There was a very important court decision just last month in Federal District Court in California where UnitedHealthcare, one of the largest insurers in the country, was found to be using discriminatory and unfair practices in their medical criteria for mental health care. And this may have a significant impact in the future. It remains to be seen because UnitedHealthcare is probably going to be appealing this decision. There is also a discrimination against rehabilitation and residential services for the mental health and substance abuse community. Again, there was a very important court decision in regard to this in California about 3 years ago, where Blue Cross of California was found to be in violation of the parity law because they would not allow residential treatment for eating disorder treatment.
I'd like to ask everybody that question about how we're doing 10 years out after this law. And Lucy Hodder, to you next. How would you assess the health of this mental health parity law? How well do you think we are doing in terms of making mental and physical illnesses on par with each other?
Well, I think we've made a lot of progress in some areas and not so many in another. But one of the wonderful things is that we are much more often realizing that our mental health is absolutely synonymous with our physical health. And one of the odd things is now that we have so much more access to claims data, I think there's a universal acceptance that all of us will at some point in their lives have a mental health issue. And in fact, mental health is oftentimes the driver of our physical health issues. So there's really a recognition of the integrated nature of mental health and health care. One of the things that's happened is health insurance coverage now includes mental health and substance use disorder treatment. That was something that happened in the Affordable Care Act. And that has meant that mental health parity law has much more power to it. The mental health parity law really just says if you have health coverage that includes mental health and substance use, then that coverage has to be applied similarly to the coverage for your health conditions. And now with everybody having that kind of coverage, mental health parity is much more enforceable. You see a lot more activity, a lot more people trying to access their coverage needs much better. And insurance companies are really following suit. They're making sure you can get mental health treatment as well as physical health treatment. I think everyone's really concerned that we may be backing into the old days where we no longer cover essential health benefits and lose that critical support for substance use treatment and mental health treatment through our insurance coverage. So that's a real issue going forward.
What is that, Lucy? The concern that we're backing into the bad old days, so to speak.
Well, mental health and substance use treatment was the last to be covered universally, and it may be the first to go if we try and really narrow our coverage and services going forward. So as we're battling around health cost and we're battling around what type of insurance should people have, everybody needs to be really concerned that we continue to cover mental health and substance use treatment as part of large group, small group, individual group, Medicaid, Medicare, and all types of coverage.
Andrew, I'd like to ask you the same question, how you see this issue of parity 10 years out from this law. But first, if you could, what do you think parity means and what doesn't it mean?
So it's really about no distinctions, right? It's really about looking at medical and behavioral health and recognizing that there shouldn't be any distinctions, and also about eliminating any barriers that might cause that. Just to give a little bit more context, though, so New Hampshire Healthy Families, we're one of the managed care organizations in New Hampshire for Medicaid, but we're also, we have Ambetter, which is our commercial product. So for Medicaid, we cover over 81,000 members. You know, we help manage the care of those individuals. And for Ambetter, we cover over 11,000 individuals.
That's a lot of people in the grand scheme.
It's a lot of people, absolutely. And between both of those plans, you know, the health plan, the Medicaid plan, along with our commercial product, parity is vastly important. And we've worked very hard to show that in terms of really helping to access care, our members to access our, you know, care that they need.
Broadly, how would you say things have changed in the past 10 years since this law was passed?
And so we've actually been in the market since 2013 with our Medicaid product, and Ambetter came in about 2016, which Lucy can probably speak a little bit better to, the Medicaid expansion population. You know, so Ambetter, it was really an important time for us to come in because Medicaid expansion went to the better known as the Premium Assistance Program through the Marketplace. And so we were able to support that population, but then you know, fast forward to 2019, the Medicaid expansion population rolled back into Medicaid, better known as the Granted Advantage Program. But we still have our Ambetter product as well, you know, which is a truly commercial product today.
Jenny, what's your perspective?
Thanks, Laura. Well, following up on what Lucy said, I think here in New Hampshire, from the insurance department perspective, you know, our focus is on regulating the insurance companies, making sure that they comply with the laws. And here in New Hampshire, I think the big changes have been really since 2014 and 2016. And that's the time period where it's been a big area of focus for us. So in 2014, that's when actual coverage for mental health services became required as part of the essential health benefits for individual and small group market plans. The parity law requires that if that's a covered service, that the services be covered on par. But the expansion of the actual required coverage was significant in New Hampshire. And as Andrea said, in 2016, when the Medicaid expansion population actually obtained their coverage through private market plans, this was a huge expansion of coverage, not only to a population who hadn't necessarily had access to those services, but also a provider base who weren't necessarily used to dealing with a commercial insurance system. So some of the things that we have done over the past 3 years, first, we convened an advisory committee on insurance coverage for mental health and addiction services. And actually, all of your guests today are or have been on that committee. It's been a great forum for bringing together insurance carriers and advocates and providers to really have conversations about how we can facilitate access.
So have we achieved parity? Dr. Fader told us it's better, but it's still not perfect.
Well, I think a couple of things that we have done in our capacity as enforcer of the laws that bind insurance companies, we do a couple of things. We do enforce the mental health parity law in two ways. First, we review all insurance plans before they can be sold to people. And so part of what the parity law says is you can't have quantitative treatment limits that are different for mental health and medical surgical services. So we look at the plan design before the plan can be sold to see whether or not that's true. Then the more challenging area to enforce is what are called non-quantitative treatment limits. So those are things like prior authorization, you know, how someone is actually treated. And our vehicle for enforcing that is something that's called a market conduct exam. So as the regulator, we can go in and look at all of the claims data. We can look at how people were treated, and then we can evaluate whether or not parity was met in those instances. So we have conducted kind of a first round of exams that were completed and released publicly in 2017 on SUD treatment services.
SUD is substance use disorder.
Yes, thank you. And we're in the midst of a broader set of examinations that will be released this summer that looks at our carrier's compliance with the parity laws.
I want to invite our listeners to join us, and then a lot more questions for all of you. Our number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. Also, be sure to check out our web post today, nhpr.org/exchange. Lots of resources there for people in immediate crisis, and also places to go if you do feel you've had problems with mental health coverage, if you feel that your plan does not achieve what we're talking about, parity. Again, you can join us with a phone call, 1-800-892-6477, or email exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Dr. Fader, what about prior authorization? How does that play into whether you're able to give your patients the care that they need and get insurance to cover it?
Well, it has a major role because, as I mentioned earlier, when you're trying to put a patient into the hospital because they're suicidal or unable to take care of themselves, you generally have to review this admission with somebody from the insurance company before they'll say, okay, we'll pay for that admission. And the criteria they use for that, as I said, are often unclear and sometimes very restrictive. The other place where prior authorization plays a major role is in prescriptions. At least half of the prescriptions I write have to be approved by the insurance company before they'll pay for them.
And sorry to interrupt, does that happen with medical ailments as well?
It does, although I think it happens in a more restrictive and difficult way with mental health and substance abuse prescriptions because these are prescriptions that people need immediately, or they're going to become psychotic, or they're going to go out and use heroin or fentanyl on the street again. And if there's any delay in this, this can have significant repercussions for the patient. And the prior authorization process creates delays. It means the patient has to wait 1, 2, 3 days before they get their prescription.
Oh, 1, 2, 3 days. If you're suicidal, that's a long time.
It is. Yes.
Do you feel that insurers are fussier, Dr. Fader, about these prior authorizations, whether it's for medicine or for being admitted into a facility? Are they fussier than they might be for a car accident or some cold medicine?
Absolutely. And again, I think it's because they can, it's easier for them to get away with it with this population than with the general medical population that has the, you know, a stronger wherewithal and less stigma to deal with when they're trying to fight these restrictions.
Well, and it's hard if you're depressed to get on the phone and complain and go through the bureaucracy and the phone tree and so forth. So what do you think about this, Lucy, that there are ways still to get around this parity law?
So I think what's really important is that consumers become as active as they can in trying to figure out what tools they have to make sure their insurance coverage works, and providers do as well. And we've really tried to get out quick guides and information that you have the number on the back of your insurance card to call your insurance company about mental health services. You can appeal denials. You can advocate by calling the insurance department. That we all need to be working together to make sure people in this population who are experiencing a mental health, especially a crisis, know what to do to activate both the treatment provider community and also to activate their insurance coverage, because they should be treated similarly for their mental health issue as for their physical issue. I know in other states, you know, like New York has been incredibly active in trying to enforce the mental health parity law. And it takes not just the consumer understanding who to call. It takes the provider as well as advocates, as well as the insurance companies, to really help make sure people in this at this stage of their lives get the help they need.
Yeah, sometimes it's tough because, again, if you're in a mental health crisis, if you're depressed, it's hard to get on the phone and, you know, be bounced around in the phone tree with the insurance company or whatever.
And all it takes is one barrier, one copay too high, one deductible too high, one pre-authorization too many, and you don't have access to the care.
Andrea, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. And I'm so happy that Dr. Fader, you mentioned this, and again, in the New Hampshire Insurance Department's advisory committee that we've been a part of, New Hampshire Healthy Families and Better, we listened to some of these concerns around prior authorization. And so we actually removed the barrier for MAT services, medication-assisted treatment. So that's your Suboxone, your Naltrexone.
That's being used a lot more for substance use.
Absolutely.
For
opioid use disorder treatment. Absolutely. And so, you know, we hear things like this and we want to make those changes to support our members and decrease any burden that the provider has as well regarding prior authorizations.
You know, Andrea, I've read that a lot of these parity laws, we have this federal law we've been talking about, but then there's a lot of state by state regulations and changes. Lucy mentioned New York. How do you see this as an insurer, these different state by state regulations? Is that more difficult for you?
So, again, we're serving New Hampshire, right?
And the
New Hampshire.
Not operating in other states.
Right. And so for New Hampshire Healthy Families and for Ambetter, so Ambetter is our New Hampshire Ambetter product. It's really about what's going on locally. What are the communities needing here in New Hampshire? And really ensuring, again, access to care. And it's even, you know, aligning with some of these other opportunities that we have with partnering with, such as the Doorways, right, and understanding that they are a major, access to care point that we want to partner with and ensure that our members have access to.
And the Doorway, again, is the new hub and spoke system,
yes,
the centralized intake system that we have here in the state to help people with substance abuse treatment. Jenny, I can see you want to jump in. We're going to do that after a short break, and we'll start taking your questions and comments as we talk about mental health parity. We'd like to hear your stories, your experiences, your questions. 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. More in a moment.
Recently on The Exchange, we explored a particularly New Hampshire institution.
A town minus its general store has a huge hole in it, and people know that. Even if you don't stop at the general store, you want there to be one because you know that that's like having the lights on. It's the pilot light of your town, and if it's out, you feel like there's something wrong.
The Exchange is your place for New Hampshire conversations. Every weekday at 9 a.m., only on NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, a decade after a federal law sought to assure parity for mental health coverage, we're checking in on whether that goal has been achieved. And let's hear from you. Send email to exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. We have four guests here to help us out with this topic. Lucy Hodder is here, professor of law and director of health law and policy at UNH School of Law. Also, Dr. Robert Fader, he's a psychiatrist in private practice in Manchester. Andrea Rancatori is here. She's with Ambetter Insurance and New Hampshire Healthy Families, which covers Medicaid patients here in the state. And also with us, Jennifer Patterson, Life and Health Director at the New Hampshire Insurance Department. And Jenny, before the break, you want to jump in, so go ahead, please.
Yes, thanks, Laura. So as looking at mental health parity has become a priority for the department over the past few years, we've really focused a lot on consumers. And we're really eager to hear from consumers, both because we can help them navigate that system oftentimes, and also because the information that we get from calls that come into our consumer services unit, that is really important information for us as we're regulating the insurer's conduct, trying to figure out what practices are happening in New Hampshire.
So what sorts of stories do you hear, Jenny, from people?
Well, can't share anything because that is confidential information. But again, I think our focus, one of the things that's been interesting is as we have done outreach in the community and with providers, people have thought that they want to hear about the parity law, but really they don't want to hear about the technical details of it. What they really want to understand is how do I successfully navigate my insurance? And so we've put together a Path to Parity presentation that's on our website. We've been out in the community. We also worked with Lucy and with New Futures to develop the consumer guide that really helps walk people through how they can file appeals, how they can stand up for their rights. And we find that that is really useful because parity is complicated, even for providers, even for family members who are trying to help access those benefits for their loved ones. And so,
why is it complicated? Should it be complicated, especially given, again, you're extremely depressed. Maybe Dr. Fader talked about one of his patients who were suicidal. I just feel like it shouldn't be complicated for folks when they're in the midst of something that's just incredibly scary and difficult. And we have a very high suicide rate in this state.
So this is an area that has really been a focus for the New Hampshire legislature as well over the past few years. And one of the laws that I think is a really good model that I'm excited about is a law that was passed in 2016 around how people are assessed in terms of substance use disorder services, and requiring carriers to use what are called the ASAM criteria. These are the criteria that are developed by the American Society of Addiction Medicine. Basically, what this law requires is that the insurance department use the same criteria that the practitioner is using in terms of assessing what's the appropriate level of care for that individual. And it creates a requirement for carriers actually to have someone on the phone during the prior authorization process who can speak, who's knowledgeable of those criteria, who can speak with the provider in terms of putting someone in the appropriate level of care. So it takes that conversation that could be confrontational in terms of the prior authorization and puts it into a situation that encourages the insurance company and the provider to be working together to place the person in where what is most appropriate for them.
How do those conversations for prior authorization, Dr. Fader, often go for you? Do you feel like the person on the other end of the phone understands what you're after, understands what you need, or do you feel like you're bumping up against walls?
Well, my feeling is that the conversation shouldn't be happening in the first place.
Because you're the professional.
Yeah. I mean, I went to medical school. I went to lots of training beyond that. And I'm making informed decisions about what's best for my patient, whereas the person on the other line who's working for the insurance company, sometimes is not a medical professional at all, especially in regard to prior authorizations for medications. These are people who have no medical training that are just going down a laundry list of criteria and asking whether they're met or not. When you're arguing about an inpatient admission, then you're often talking with a medical professional, but you're coming at it from different angles. I mean, I'm coming at it from the angle of what's best for my patient and what do they need right now. The insurance company is coming from the angle of, well, if we can avoid this hospitalization, we'll save money.
Sometimes it's easy to blame insurance companies, and yet sometimes it's not the company itself, it's the policy that the individual or the employer has purchased. You know, you think you should have coverage for this, you call the insurer and they say, yeah, that'd be a good idea, but your company has purchased a skimpy product. So I'm just wondering where we all point fingers here.
Yeah, that's a very different issue, Laura, I think, when something is clearly not covered by a policy. I don't get into discussions about that, because if it's not covered, it's not covered. The discussions that I get into are around medical necessity. Does the patient need this treatment? And that's what's focused on. The treatment is clearly covered, but only if it's medically necessary. And that's where the argument comes in, defining what's medically necessary.
I see. You have a different interpretation of what's medically necessary than the other person on the phone, and you feel like since you're the medical professional, your version of what's medically
right.
necessary and should be considered.
I've seen this patient. I know this patient. The person on the other end of the phone doesn't even know what the patient looks like.
Yeah, it's tough. Andrea, I wonder what you think about that situation where the insurer is required to make this authorization, but you know, you've got your boxes to check and you've got people that you have to answer to, including
sure.
your financial people.
So for New Hampshire Healthy Families and Ambetter, it's really about knowing where this member's at long before needing that higher level of care, right? And so we have care management program that's very comprehensive. We're integrated. So we have our registered nurses sitting next to our behavioral health clinicians, utilizing each other as subject matter experts to really consult and support members, creating comprehensive care plans, right, to really help address a member's need and keep members in their communities, right, in that least restrictive setting where they want to be with their families, you know, and in their homes. In terms of looking at access to care, and again, it's the comprehensive care plan, it's really about this whole care, or whole person care model where we're looking at medical, we're looking at behavioral health needs, which encompasses both mental health and substance use disorder right needs, but also social determinants, right? Because we recognize that there's factors outside of even medical and behavioral health needs symptoms that can impact their care. And so we really want to look at all of that to support them, provide them with the resources that they need, to do well and be healthier.
Lucy, I'd love to get your thoughts on this sort of push-pull. Somebody has to pay for the coverage, but we have Dr. Fader who, you know, he says he's the medical professional and he doesn't like to be told to check certain boxes, yes or no. And I just wonder what you think about that, because again, someone is on the paying end of it as well.
Absolutely. And I think that's the constant dialogue we need to have. I think the real critical issue right now is New Hampshire is almost number one in the country in terms of death from mental illness and substance use disorder, so suicide and addiction overdose, we are almost number one.
Which is terrifying to think about.
And the rates of diagnosing people with co-occurring mental illness is substantial. So we know we have a real crisis, and it needs coverage, it needs barrier reduction, it needs anti-stigma education. We need to address this at all levels. So Dr. Fader is completely correct. There can't be barriers when the medical professional is able to treat and screen and assess the patient and makes a recommendation for coverage. What we also need is to be helping ensure that at every level of care, we have integrated behavioral health. And we've made a lot of strides. Andrea was talking about care management tools to support patients. Also, integrated behavioral health. We've been trying to get a workforce that can accommodate that and to get the payers, you know, the health insurance companies, to actually pay for that kind of integrated care. So we're moving forward with baby steps, but there's a lot more we need to do because it's absolutely critical that we destigmatize and have people advocate for their own health at every level of care. So we can have a population that's able to be healthy both mentally and physically.
Well, and those overdose numbers and the suicide numbers are terrifying. What does integrated behavioral health mean, Lucy?
So integrated behavioral health really means that either in a behavioral health center, you have some primary care able to help support a patient, or in a primary care setting, like a health center or a primary care practice or a family practice, you have trained, credentialed social workers, mental health professionals who, when a patient's there and they're screened and they're talking to their doctor and they say, yes, I'm depressed, there's someone immediately there to help. So you can try and help wrap patient-centered care around the patient where they are seeking care. And so it's really been a critical piece of the healthcare changes to address behavioral health issues. Workforce is a major issue, though. We do not have the support for the workforce that gets us back to how much we pay mental health professionals, et cetera. So I'm sure others want to jump in on that, but it's a major issue facing New Hampshire.
I definitely want to talk about the workforce issues. In fact, the Exchange is planning a whole series on workforce issues in the state more broadly, but we should talk about that in the context of this program as well. Jenny, real quick, and then we've got some callers who want to jump in.
Yes, I think some of the points that Lucy and Andrea just made really underscore the importance of the advisory committee that the insurance department has convened, because a lot of these conversations are much better as conversations. On that committee, we've got medical directors from the insurance companies who very much want to be engaged and creatively thinking about how best to serve their members. We had at our last meeting a presentation specifically on the integration of primary care, and we'll continue to discuss that.
Okay, and I know you've got some thoughts on that too, Dr. Fader. Let's get our listeners in as well. The number here in the Exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. We are unraveling mental health parity today in the Exchange. We'd love your questions, comments, personal experiences. Our number is 1-800-892-6477. And Deli is calling in from Concord. Hi, Deli. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, Laura. This is probably a question for Jenny. I'm wondering if the advisory committee has looked at the parity between the managed care organizations within New Hampshire. My son has schizoaffective disorder, and we had New Hampshire Healthy Families. He was denied coverage. We switched to WellSense, and he was given the coverage. So within the state, there seems to be parity.
Deli, thank you for the call. Jenny, go ahead, and anybody else, too.
Yeah. Yes, thank you, Deli.
And if you could just explain a little bit more what she's talking about for those who are not in this.
Yes, and I think the question was really about parity in the coverage for the managed care organizations. And actually, the managed care organizations are offering care through Medicaid. So I think I'll probably bump the question to Andrea, but it really illustrates the challenges for, you know, a parent or a child or someone who's trying to help someone else navigate the system, that we, the insurance department, actually don't regulate that Medicaid coverage. And so all of those challenges are really subject to oversight by the Department of Health and Human Services, who administers that Medicaid program.
Oh, hang on. So although you at the insurance department are supposed to oversee and regulate insurance companies, you don't have oversight over those insurers who provide coverage to the Medicaid population?
Exactly. So that's one of the things that's so challenging about the parity law, is there are very many different authorities that enforce it. There's the Federal Department of Labor that enforces it for some coverage. There's, you know, it applies to Medicaid coverage, so that's Department of Health and Human Services. And so what we regulate at the insurance department is only fully insured coverage in New Hampshire.
Wow, it's complicated. I want to hear from everybody on this. Go ahead, Lucy.
Well, but I understand, and I'm sure that the insurance department's phone number for consumers will take a call for anyone under any coverage and direct it to the right place. So we've gotten their promise on that. Deli, if that this comes up again, call the number on the back of your insurance card, call the insurance department, and get put to the right person. The mental health parity laws were slower to take effect in the Medicaid program, despite the fact that Medicaid has a very robust mental health and substance use disorder treatment coverage opportunity for those enrolled. But it is now firmly in the managed care contracts, especially those going into effect in 2019. So you should see a lot more oversight by the Department of Health and Human Services on mental health parity and engagement by the MCOs, and I'm sure Andrea can speak to that. They've been much more engaged on making sure that their products going forward are going to really address the parity issues.
I am surprised, though, to hear you say that, Lucy, that the insurers working with the Medicaid population were slower to get this parity up and running, given the substance use crisis, given the suicide crisis that we have in this state.
Yes, that was a virtue of when the rules went into effect for them.
Yeah, Dr. Fader and then Andrea, go ahead.
Well, one of the great ironies about the parity law is that when it was instituted, it did not apply to either Medicaid or Medicare. Both of them were completely excluded from the Parity Act. And Medicaid finally came on in 2016. Medicare still is completely outside the Parity Act, which I think goes back to the fact that stigma is a major issue here, and the federal government is taking advantage of it by not including Medicare under parity.
Which I found, again, pretty shocking, given how many people are covered by Medicare, especially in New Hampshire, one of the oldest states in the nation, and especially since, and you probably know this better than I do, Dr. Fader, that sometimes older age is a time when people have mental health problems.
Oh, absolutely. Mental health problems are rampant in our elderly community. And unfortunately, the state can't do anything about this. Medicare rules are all managed in Washington, D.C. The states are powerless to do anything about it.
I was really surprised to hear that Medicare, that huge population of people, is not covered by mental health parity. Go ahead. I'd love to hear from you too, Andrea. And thank you, Deli, for the call. Her concern that her son's coverage was not good enough under one type of managed care plan, but then it was included on the other one.
Sure, absolutely. And again, you know, Deli, thank you so much for that, for your call. And it's really about understanding, you know, where the breakdown was in that. And in terms of accessing care for denial of a prior authorization, I think it always comes back to, you know, members and providers, they have the ability to appeal decisions, right? And that there could have just been miscommunication or some sort of a gap in the clinical. And so we would really want to know that because we want folks to have the access to the care. We want people to get the right care in the right place at the right time. We just do, right? It means healthier, and that's what we want. We want our members to be healthier.
And Lucy mentioned calling the insurance department and getting resources there, maybe being put to the right person. I do want to mention that on our website, nhpr.org/exchange, we have lots of resources today, so we put them up there for you. Again, it's nhpr.org/exchange. Let's go back to the phones, and Amy's calling from Derry. Hi, Amy. You're on the air. Welcome.
Oh, hi there. Thank you for having me.
Sure. Go ahead.
I think my question is for Andrea. I'm wondering about, does mental health parity apply when it comes to having an adequate provider network?
We should really talk about that, Amy. I'm so glad you called. And everyone wants to talk about that because the network here is not as robust as it could be. Jenny, you first. Go ahead.
Yes. Oh, thank you, Laura. And thank you, Amy, for the question. Absolutely. Mental health parity applies with respect to provider networks. And this is an area when New Hampshire Insurance Department went in a couple of years ago to do examinations with respect to access to SUD treatment services that we found to be really challenging for all of the carriers that we looked at.
There and again, SUD is substance use disorder.
Yes. So there were a lot of challenges just with the carrier's ability to contract with an adequate network. Last summer, the insurance department adopted a new network adequacy rule that we're very, very excited about and that we think will help further access to specifically mental health providers in the state. It's a rule that basically requires those services to be close to home for people, and it also enables us to compare on an apples-to-apples basis what the network looks like and to map the network. So I can talk about it more after the break, but we're very excited about that rule, specifically for mental health services.
Really challenging, though, as everybody here knows, in a state where there's a workforce shortage in general, and especially in the healthcare fields. So we'll talk about that after a break. Amy, thank you so much for the call. We'll take more of your calls, too. Our number, 1-800-892-6477.
I'm Jason Moon, host of the Bear Brook podcast from NHPR. Join me for a live show at the Wilbur Theater in Boston on Tuesday, May 14th. I'll speak about how we produced Bear Brook, the controversial science that helped crack open the case, and how that science is changing criminal investigations all across the country. Get your tickets now at thewilbur.com.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on our show, Democratic presidential candidate Marianne Williamson. Send your questions for the candidate before the show to exchange@nhpr.org. And be sure to join us for that conversation live at 9. This hour, we're looking at mental health parity, what it's supposed to mean, and how that works out in practice. And we're hearing your stories. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. And Dr. Fader, just before the break, we heard from Amy, who asked a great question that we really should tackle, and that is concerning workforce. There just are not, from what I hear, enough providers to give Granite Staters the mental health and substance use treatment services that they want. So how does that play into parity?
It plays in that if you can't get the services you need, then the provision is not equal to physical health services.
So you're covered in name only, basically, if you can't find a provider.
And the problem is that if somebody has a problem with depression or drug use, they go to their insurance company, they're given a list of providers that are part of that insurance company's network. The list is relatively short. The patient calls everyone on the list and they're all full. They can't get in. So they either have to wait a long time for treatment or go outside their health insurance network, and oftentimes patients just give up and they don't get the treatment. And one of the main reasons the networks are so small, in addition to the fact that we don't have enough mental health providers in this state, is that the reimbursement for the providers through most of the insurance companies is relatively low compared to other providers. So the providers that we do have often don't join the networks because they can do better just seeing patients out of pocket and not having to deal with the low reimbursement rates and all the prior authorization hassles that they would if they were part of the network.
Well, and for psychiatrists, from what I understand, you're often small or solo practitioners, so you don't have this big administrative staff who can help you with all the paperwork and bureaucracy and so forth.
Exactly.
So do you take insurance?
I do take insurance. I only take two insurances because each company has their own rules and regulations, and some reimburse better than others. So I do take two of the larger commercial insurances in the state because I have a lot of patients that have had insurance and I feel an obligation to them. But I also see a lot of patients out of pocket.
A study from 2017 found behavioral health patients are four times more likely to go out of network, so paying out of pocket. How could health insurers, Andrea, make these provider networks more robust? This seems to be a real problem.
Absolutely. And so New Hampshire Healthy Families and Better, we recognize that, right? I'm a licensed clinical mental health counselor. I'm also a master licensed alcohol and drug counselor.
Oh, wow.
And one area that we felt we could really impact is in New Hampshire, we have certified recovery support workers. So these are individuals that are certified through the New Hampshire Licensing Board to provide recovery support services. So those struggling with substance use disorder. And these are this is a service that can be provided in the community. It can be provided in the ED. Office space, really universal. And so what we did is we partnered with several community organizations to sponsor the core curriculum training that's required for this certification. We then mentored these folks through the process, you know, all the regs that are required in order to obtain this certification. And then once certified, we're helping them to, craft their resumes, interview skills, and find employment.
These are recovery coaches again for substance abuse.
Absolutely. So that was something, again, you don't think of insurance as doing this type of work, but we found this to be crucial and an opportunity that we could support. So we're doing that right now.
How much, Lucy, is this lack of providers in New Hampshire related to the Medicaid reimbursement rates, which we hear are so low in the state?
Well, I think reimbursement rates are low, and that's no question about it. And the burdens on providers are higher, and the administrative burdens on practices and administering any kind of healthcare benefit is just higher. So they're very tied together. I think one of the real issues is trying to make sure we have consumers understand where to access the providers in the right place, building up that provider community in the best way that meets the patient needs and that's reimbursable and sustainable by the insurance companies. The doorways now are a place people should really use 211 if they have a substance use or mental health issue to get to the right place in their community. They're really building up the access point so people can be assessed and then transferred and referred to the right provider at the right time. That's not going to change the situation overnight, but it will help. Also, we're training providers around medically assisted treatment, so we're trying to make sure every single primary care office around the state has somebody who is able to provide and support medically assisted treatment and ensuring that there's coverage and payment accordingly. And then finally, just making sure that the providers who are trained and accessing an education to go into mental health and substance use treatment supports are actually able to be employed in a sustainable way. They're not barriers to their licensure. There's not barriers to their supervision so they can be well trained. And one of the things that we are so concerned about is they go to work at a mental health center and next thing you know, they've been hired by a hospital in Massachusetts or they've been hired by an insurance company at much higher rates. So one of the things we have to be very careful of is that we are actually making sure we're supporting these trained providers in the communities that they need to be serving, and we're not pulling them into administrative or other bigger systems and away from the New Hampshire communities who need them.
Dr. Fader?
One of the ways that this network adequacy and fee reimbursement issue clearly violates parity is that a study that was done recently showed that primary care providers who often have to provide mental health services because there aren't enough psychiatrists to do it, they are reimbursed at significantly higher rates than psychiatrists for providing the same exact service.
And why is that, Dr. Fader?
You'd have to ask the insurance companies that. I don't know. I think because they can get away with paying psychiatrists less.
Jenny? That doesn't sound like parity to me.
So this is such a complicated issue, and it really illustrates the fact that this issue of parity is just not black and white. So when it comes to reimbursement rates, that is something that under the commercial mental health parity law is covered as an example of non-quantitative treatment limit, just as network adequacy is.
Well, I'm sorry. I don't really know what you mean by that.
Okay. So that's very understandable because it's confusing. So what the parity law says is that there has to be parity between mental health services and medical surgical services in basically two respects. First is in quantitative treatment limits, so things like copays, deductibles, out of pocket. That's the more straightforward part because you can look at the plan design and you or we as a regulator can see whether or not it's met.
So dollars, $25 for a physical ailment copay, $25 for a mental illness copay.
Exactly. They need to be on par, and there are standards for determining that. The non-quantitative treatment limits really have to do with how treatment is accessed and under what conditions. So it might be something like a step therapy requirement or fail first for a prescription. The standards for provider admission to participate in a network, kind of medical management standards. And the standard for all of those issues, when we go in and we look at the insurance company practices, is are the processes that are applied as written and in operation comparable to and applied no more stringently than the processes and strategies and evidentiary standards that are applicable to medical surgical benefits. So there's tremendous complexity to looking at that. And when it comes to an issue like provider reimbursement, there actually, you know, there was a study that was done by Milliman, the actuarial firm, in December of 2017 that looked at kind of strictly from a quantitative perspective, what were the relativities to Medicare for primary care versus mental health care? And they found disparities. And there's a step two to that process. So the first step is, how do they relate to each other? The second is, are the processes that govern them being applied in a comparable manner. And so that's the kind of thing that we look at when we go in our market conduct exam, and we can take an in-depth look at all of those processes.
So in those market conduct exams, Jenny, so it sounds like the dollars have to be equal for what someone might pay for a physical doctor versus a psychiatrist like Dr. Fader. So if that has to be equal, why doesn't it also have to be equal for Dr. Fader to be paid the same amount as Dr. Jones, who fixes your sprained ankle?
Right. So that from the consumer perspective, the quantitative measures have to be equal.
Right. So
that's
why not
a matter
at the provider
of plan design
level?
And the reason that they aren't from a level of provider reimbursement is that we as insurance regulators, this is a market that we're regulating. So these are contracted rates between the provider and the insurance company. And so that's not something that we directly regulate. It's different from Medicare. It's different from Medicaid. In those areas, there's direct regulation of the reimbursement rates. That's not how the private markets look. That's why there's this two-step look. What are the relativities? And then second, do those processes, do those evidentiary standards, are they being applied in a comparable way? That's where that United Healthcare decision that came out recently is so interesting, because in that case, the court actually kind of went beyond and looked at how the policies were being applied, which is really what the law requires us to do.
Let's take a couple of emails. I know we could all continue on this for a moment, but I want to bring our listeners back into it. And this person sent in an email, didn't want to give a name. My wife and I are on Ambetter at $264 a month, for which we are very grateful. When it comes to mental health coverage, though, it becomes kind of useless, this person says. A copay of 20% equals $25 a visit times two people, $50 a visit. Most therapists want to start more frequently at first, say twice a week. That's $400 a month, almost twice the cost of our monthly payments for our entire healthcare premium, which is reduced because of our income. This person says parity seems to be irrelevant. So this is an issue for sure, especially with mental health treatment, where, Andrea, as this person says, the provider often wants to see you frequently at first to make sure you're on a good path. And I just wonder what you think about the copays really starting to add up there.
So it's finding out, yeah, absolutely, what the member's really needing. And we want to hear about any kind of struggles or challenges or barriers that people are facing, because that's how we're going to know to look deeper into that and work to address them. I think the example I gave earlier around MAT services, right, removing prior authorization for
medication assisted treatment.
Yeah. And you know, not to say that we didn't know about it, but, you know, hearing folks, you know, say, hey, this is a problem for us, this is a barrier to our access to care, you know, it, just knowing that we're able to make those changes and remove some of those barriers.
You know, it's interesting because when we talk about parity, and Jenny and I just looked at those numbers, Lucy, you know, $25 for a physical visit, $25 for a mental health visit. But the emailer makes a good point with mental health coverage. You know, it isn't just, I have this weird rash, please take care of it. Okay, we're done. There's a series of visits over a long period of time sometimes.
Right. And I think some of it is that we have to start ensuring that we're looking at our health policy and our mental health policy on par as well. So why isn't access to mental health screening and assessment and an initial contact for treatment considered preventative care? Given how ubiquitous the diagnosis is across the community and how important an investment in mental health care is for someone's overall health down the line. Again, if you're looking at public health and all health policy, it's also a real crisis, particularly in New Hampshire. So we should be innovative. We should be forward-looking. We should really be trying to make sure that barriers do not exist on the ground to accessing care and treatment that's recommended for people with substance use disorder and mental health.
Let's take one more call, and this is Alex in Rochester. Hi, Alex. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I really appreciate this discussion. I myself have a mental illness. I struggle with depression, and I'm on a fixed income on Social Security disability, so I can't afford to see a provider out of pocket. So I have Medicare and Medicaid. When I called around to look for a talk therapist, I remember calling my community mental health agency here in Rochester, and I was told there's a six-month waiting list to see a therapist. I called other therapists in the area who do accept my insurance, but they don't have vacancy, that they don't have openings to see me. So it's like I kind of gave up on the idea of seeing a therapist. I'm just kind of winging it and getting most of my you know, talk therapy from 12-step support groups. You know, I stay clean and sober, but I just, you know, I feel like there should be, if there was mental health parity, I wouldn't have to, you know, I wouldn't be shunned from seeing a therapist because they can't afford to pay. And also, it seems to me there's maybe you've already discussed the issue, there wouldn't be emergency department waiting times of, you know, days or even weeks for some people to get into New Hampshire Hospital, for example.
If they got help more quickly. Alex, I really hope the best for you in your struggles, and I'm really glad you called. And Dr. Fader, this is what we talked about earlier. You may have that insurance card, and it may say, yeah, Laura, you're covered, but if there's nobody around to see me, then it doesn't really matter, does it?
It's a real problem, especially for the Medicaid and Medicare population, because the reimbursement rates for them are significantly lower than they are for commercial insurance. So the majority of the providers that I know don't take either Medicaid or Medicare because of that. And the only place that you can get treatment with those insurances are through community mental health centers, which are overburdened and have long waiting lists, as this man discovered.
Thank you very much again for the call, Alex. What do you think, Lucy, about this provider issue that Alex mentions? I know we've talked about it a lot, but what are some other sort of creative ways that New Hampshire could enhance its provider network? Because as Alex points out, we're seeing this everywhere.
Right, and I think it's certainly risen to the level of awareness. I know the legislature is tackling a number of bills to try and support services for mental health and substance use disorder. But we have to be raising this issue on every possible level. Is it preventative care? Can we integrate it into primary care practices? Can we open more acute care centers like they are in Concord where people can go? Can people access 211 and get to a doorway for supported services? How can we make sure everybody has an avenue? And we need to be also looking at this in a more integrated way so that our health systems are supporting our mental health services as well in the best way possible. And they are really stepping up as we are tackling this across the board.
Well, we could have talked a lot more. I do want to let everyone know that we have a lot of resources on our website. Again, a number for suicide prevention, other numbers where you can get help, including the 211 that you mentioned, Lucy, for substance abuse treatment. Again, our website is nhpr.org/exchange. And all of you, thank you very much for coming in. Dr. Fader, it was nice to meet you. Thank you for being here.
You're welcome.
That's Dr. Robert Fader, psychiatrist in private practice in Manchester. Andrea, good to see you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Laura.
That's Andrea Rancatori. She's with Ambetter Insurance and New Hampshire Healthy Families. Jennifer Patterson, thank you for helping us out as always.
Thanks so much, Laura.
That's Jenny Patterson. She's Life and Health Director at the New Hampshire Insurance Department. And Lucy, I really appreciate your time. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Laura. Great show.
That's Lucy Hodder, Professor of Law and Director of Health Law and Policy at UNH School of Law. And this is The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.